Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com. I'm on iTunes. I'm on AllThingsComedy.com. You can donate at JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com. You can buy merch, T-shirts, and CDs and whatnot, and also see where I'm doing stand-up comedy. And I have an ad this episode. So I say, let's get into it right after the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song. He will sing his lyrics to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of this episode. Patrick Brady will fix this audio, thank God. And Vilmos does my website, JackieCation.com. And now, the ad. Hello, Rangers. I was sent an awesome set of sheets from ParachuteHome.com. And so I'm going to do an ad about it because they sent me some awesome sheets. And I love sheets, quite honestly. ParachuteHome.com is an online bedding company from Venice, California, right here in the Los Angeles area. They have 100% long staple Egyptian cotton bedding, my favorite kind of bedding, quite honestly, because that whole, you remember when the thread count was a scam? I read an article, is that it can only go up to 450 thread count, and then they're doing a crosshatch, and then it isn't quite as soft anymore. So these are great sheets, you guys. They really are. They're milled in Tuscany. They've been milling sheets for 80 years in Tuscany, and they parachute home. They ship it right to your door, so it cuts out the middleman. They're a lot cheaper than equally fancy sheets that have to go through some sort of weird middleman. I spent a bunch of money one time on some sweet sheets, and they're great, but these are just as good, and they're about $150 less for the set of sheets. And when I say a set of sheets, I'm talking about a fitted sheet. Full size, by the way. Andy and I doing some cuddling. A full size sheet, a flat sheet, and two pillowcases. They were like $1 million. And They are great. They're beautiful sheets. I love them a lot. These are just as great. And you can get a deal from the Dork Forest. If you go to ParachuteHome.com/dork, you get $25 off your first order. That's right. And it's exciting. I'm a sleeper because I do stand-up. I like to get somewhere between 8 and 13 hours of sleep a night. So Anoma sheets, you guys. And these are super. They're soft, but they're not weirdly fuzzy. They're just cotton, soft, super cozy, ParachuteHome.com. They asked me to weigh in. 40% of Americans, I guess, sleep without a top sheet. And what do I think of that? I'll tell you what I think of that. I think they're animals. I think that they're animals and it isn't okay. Because we didn't have a top sheet when I was a kid, but I lived a different life when I was a child. I don't know why we didn't have top sheets. But I recommend a top sheet, especially in a warm climate where you're just going to want to use the top sheet. Other than that, I went to their website to see if it was easy to order. It is. It is easy to order. The color I picked was slate, just so you know. They're a local company here in Los Angeles. And they are a good company. They give back. They partnered with the UN Foundation's Nothing But Nets campaign. So they donate to provide malaria prevention bed nets all around the world. So they're good people. They make a heck of a nice sheet, and you can get $25 off on your first order if you go to ParachuteHome.com/dork. There it is. Let us start the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room with David Koechner. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Dork Forest. It took 2 years for us.
Yes, it did.
To us finally.
I think it might be 2+. I didn't check exactly that email link or thread, but it was, yeah.
It was a long time.
But as I said, it often takes me or us 2 years to have dinner with people.
Right. You have a large, sprawling family of many Koechners.
We got five kids.
Five kids that will go out into the world and make more.
Oh, boy.
How many boys, how many girls, actually?
Two boys, three girls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how does it break down? The oldest?
Charlie's the oldest.
Okay.
And that's a boy. Margot is the next. Charlie's 16.
Okay.
Margot's 13. Twins, Sergeant and Audrey, are 9. And Eve is 4.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Twins. That'll do it.
Yep.
That'll add to the numbers.
The chaos.
Quick. Yeah. But I like that it was a boy and a girl, and then you're like, we're just going to keep.
It actually went boy, girl.
Yeah.
Boy, girl.
Boy, girl. true.
Within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So people, David Koechner, you know him from a song and story, but you can go to at David Koechner for Twitter, which is K-O-E-C-H-N-E-R. And then it's just davidkoechner.com. Stand-up comic, hilarious actor guy. You know, these things. People know your work, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, they know my face.
They know your
face. You're right. They know my work. They struggle with my last name, and my guess is people struggle with your last name, too.
All the time. All the time. Yeah.
And it's I never cared. Of course, you know, when you're just starting to show business, you don't know.
Right.
And until years later, it's like, oh, I should have just rectified that. Either just changed it.
Right.
To K-E-S-H-N-E-R. Koechner, which is more in line with the German, or right. Just made it K-E-C-K-N-E-R. Because people, they get K-O-E and then they punt.
Oh, that's it. It is German, though.
It is German, but right. I'm not German. My grandfather was adopted.
Okay.
And so
Did you do a DNA thing and find out what you were?
Well, we traced it back to an orphanage in New York.
Okay.
And we don't know if... it was a single mother, or if it was a broken family. Let's see. He was not a newborn.
Okay.
I just talked to my sisters about this because we recently had a family vacation. He was a couple years old.
Okay.
You know, he wasn't brand new, and
right.
So we don't know of a situation where he was there at the orphanage for years,
right?
Or if the mother finally had to just get rid of him. It was, you know, just past the turn of the century,
right? Okay.
And then there was either a Williams or a Howard, and we don't know if that was father, mother, whatever.
Oh, that was on the paperwork.
Yes.
Okay.
But you can tell by the pallor of my skin.
Yes.
That I'm Irish.
My mother translucent.
Translucent. Yes.
Yes.
My mother was a Downie.
Okay.
And,
her last name was Downey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And her mother was an O'Connor.
Okay.
That's full Irish on that side. And I suspect that maybe it was a Williams on my grandfather's side,
right.
Which would make it further Anglican Anglo.
Well, I think it's that Muttley of Northern European or Northern British Isles kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Ashcraft, my fella, he's a big Muttley guy. If you asked him what his ancestry was, he would say, well, we're from Mississippi.
Right.
And you're like, well, what about before then? He was like, well, it's been a long time, but
yep.
I believe it's Welsh and Irish and Brit, you know, English and...
I love that the provincial attitude from the South.
That's where I'm from. It's entirely the South.
Yep. You don't need to know anything more than...
We're from Mississippi?
Yeah.
When he told me that, I was like, okay, I'm Armenian, and then on the other side, I'm Irish and Norwegian.
Yeah.
But I'm from Wisconsin... And there's a lot of Germans and a lot of Swedes and a lot of, you know, that.
Yes, but, everywhere.
Yeah, but it is a very Southern thing. I've been dipped. I've been dipped in some Southern culture
mm-hmm.
because both his entire family is from this small town
in
outside of Tupelo. Yeah.
Wow, how small?
Not as small as that little town in Missouri you're from.
Tipton.
Tipton. It's called New Albany. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big it is, but it's got one espresso machine.
A lot of people left Albany and said, this isn't it. Nope.
No, we gotta size down. We're gonna downsize.
Yeah.
Let's go to New Albany.
First of all, and I don't want to be disparaging to your listeners that might be from Mississippi, but you know, to declare you're from Mississippi is something you never have to do.
No, a lot of people.
Maybe it's something you should just keep to yourself. That's not nice.
You know, his young cousin who he joined the Marines. To get out of New Albany, but now has a lot of nostalgia for New Albany.
Is that right?
Yeah. What's funny about young Andrew is he joined the Marines, and he had joined the Marines, and his mama said to me, well, you've been over to Iraq. Why don't you should tell him to join the Marines? And I said, well, has he signed the papers? And she goes, yeah. And I said, too late.
Too late,
my friend. And I turned to him, and I said, you know, what my dad always told my brothers is that you can join the service, but, you know, you can also just leave.
You can leave the house.
You can leave town. You can go get a job shoveling sand for $2.50 an hour anywhere in the world. You don't need to join the service to do it. And my dad had joined the service. And he was in the Navy and the Marines and all this
stuff. Let's see. What year was your dad in the service?
Oh, my father is a genius of timing. He was in from, I believe it was 54 to 60.
That's when my dad was there.
He missed everything.
Yep. Right after Korea.
And my right dad, before
so my,
Vietnam.
Our parents were probably... Roughly the same age.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's just a matter of course. That's what you did. He wasn't drafted.
Nope.
But that's what he's from a family of nine. And
right.
There were five boys. And so every one of them, except the last one, joined the service.
What did the youngest do?
Oh, the war was over. It was before Vietnam. And he just worked on the farm. And then
he just got a
yeah,
life.
Yeah.
My dad joined because he got my mom pregnant.
Wow.
And he was the only child. He was an only child. And then he had six kids.
Okay, so did we.
I'm the youngest of six.
I'm the third of six.
There you go.
There you go.
And but he was so funny about my dad because he heard about Vietnam. And that's when he didn't re-up. As my father has always said, he said, I'd rather be called a coward than an idiot.
Wow.
He was a medic. And he said...
Were they pressuring him to stick around for another 4 years?
They knew he had, at the time, he had four kids. Uh-huh. And they were like, well, you should probably stay with your kids. And he was like, I should probably stay with my kids.
Yeah. So he's in 1960. We had not, we were only funding the French at the time.
Right. But he had heard about, like, because he was in the Marines. Mm-hmm. And he had heard about, there were a bunch
of advisors.
Advisors who were shooting at people and being shot at.
Boy, we wanted in that war so badly.
So badly.
We had to make up an excuse to get in.
Because we're.
Did you hit me? Bro, did you push me? You pushed me. He's like, no, we didn't push you.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was, it's completely insane. So let's talk briefly about the David Koechner Dorknum, which kind of leads into it a little bit because you like nonfiction. You like kind
of. I do like nonfiction.
It's because, in my opinion, people read either fiction or nonfiction. Shorts, and if you like fiction, it's short stories or novels. And if you like nonfiction, sometimes you can get into short fiction. Do you ever read?
Short fiction. When it's fiction, I love short stories.
Yeah.
And if anybody can help me with this, there was a compilation, this is something I'm still searching for to this day. It's a compilation when I was in sixth grade of fiction. And I can't remember. I've looked and looked and looked. Kurt Vonnegut or...
might be Vonnegut. It might be Heinlein. It might be...
Gosh darn it. Help me with Vonnegut or...
Gibson. William Gibson. Vonnegut. There's Robert Heinlein.
No, the other famous science fiction writer.
Okay. From Vonnegut era?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. What is it? What kind
who
of stuff?
Who wrote Harrison Bergeron? Was that Vonnegut?
I think so. That sounds
it was,
right.
It wasn't them that wrote it, but it was a compilation of short stories of American fiction.
Yeah.
And there was a short story about a guy who was a mild, meek accountant with a very stern wife. And he always, every night, he would go to the bar or gin mill of some kind.
Okay.
And play piano.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a place where he could witness this life that he and his Christian wife would never allow them to go. Turns out he had tons of money saved, but he didn't want to tell his wife because he loved playing a piano at this bar.
Yeah.
And I've looked and looked and looked. I can't find that compilation, and I don't know that story. I've looked under gin mill. I looked under the piano, all kinds of things. I've looked for Vonnegut in compilations.
Right. So
Vonnegut wrote Harrison Bergeron.
Yes.
That's what I was trying to think.
Yes. And Todd Mason or Mary Ellen, forgetting your last name, sorry, who's a librarian who listens to the show. Somebody email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com. I'm
awesome.
Sure you're yelling at your iPod right now.
Another story in this compilation was The Contender, which was about a young African-American boxer who ended up going wrong. I don't think it was James Baldwin. I don't think it was a Baldwin short story, but that was among the things in this compilation.
Okay, so
I almost
want
to go
that.
Back to my grade school in that sixth grade classroom. And go, where is it? I know you're still reading the same books.
Yeah, I'm sure that. Oh, I'm sure they are.
Because it was such a fascinating short story, and I remember loving it so much, and I can't remember the name of it because details always escape me.
Right.
But I thought that short story is one you could turn into a movie.
Right. Well, you know, and that's – do you ever do that? I mean, I do that ever since moving here. You read things and go, well, why isn't that a film?
Right.
I have said it before on this program, but there is a great – it's a trilogy, but only the first one needs to be. It would be bigger than Blade Runner. I don't know if that's true, but it was called When Gravity Fails.
And who wrote that?
George Alec Effinger.
Okay.
And it is essentially it's a hard-boiled noir mystery novel set in a futuristic Mumbai in the red light district.
Oh my gosh, which is now
Muslim. Yeah, which is and everyone's Muslim, lapsed Muslim or devout Muslim, but super awesome. And it's a cool story.
It is a cool story. But, you know, in today's climate, you know, you think about the recent attack on Sony.
Right.
Perhaps because of the interview.
Oh, right.
Can you imagine the outrage in the Muslim world
if
they were to.
I've spaced the what was the interview? I forgot.
Oh, Seth Rogen.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, the movie, the interview.
Yes. Yeah.
That's right.
And if you were to suggest that a future Muslim world included a red light district.
Yes.
Which I'm sure there are. Exists anyway. It's just so.
Oh, it's
far.
Everywhere.
Yes, of course, of course.
Well, there was, you know, when I was in Iraq, we stayed at, and I was just performing for the troops, right? So we were staying in Baghdad at the
Baghdad.
Yeah, in his in Saddam Hussein's compound. We stayed at his guest house, and
you've already covered this on your show.
No.
Okay, come on. But, all right, you thought you were going to interview me.
Well,
hold
I know.
On.
What the hell just happened? We're 11 minutes in.
But wait,
okay, so,
wait. That's fascinating. What year did you do it?
Well, it was in 2009.
Holy
I think.
Shit, we're so, still in
oh, it
the
was,
thick of it.
We, it was a dumb year to go. But I went with Scott Kennedy. Remember Scott Kennedy? He wore FUBU jerseys, and he was a big guy, but he was gay, and he was a comic. He hung out at the Improv a lot, drank a lot of whiskey. Good egg. Passed away about 2 years ago. But he went, he brought comics, two different comics every month for 42 weeks in a row.
God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him. And he would take people to forward operating bases and whatever JSS stands for. Yeah, he was like, the only reason I went was because he went every month.
Wow.
And he knew who to call if there was trouble.
Yeah.
So I was,
Lord.
So I'm recently married, right? And I was like, I don't know how to not do this. And Andy's like, it'd be great if you called every day.
Yeah.
And so
I got asked to go several times.
Yeah.
And not even to Iraq, but I said no every time because
you have a huge family and a big responsibility.
I can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. Okay.
We stayed at the guest house, and the guest house was attached to his sort of castle-y compound thing. Several things about Saddam Hussein that that even the Iraqis would say, well, this was good that it wasn't there. I mean, granted, 100,000 dead later.
Right.
Not, I mean, I don't know what, I don't know how, you know, what, 2020 hindsight, whatever. But he had diverted most of the drinking water to create these ponds.
You're kidding.
Yeah, to make this, because there is a part of the Muslim faith in Islam, you can get someone to tell you. You can get an imam to tell you that that if bad things happen surrounded by water, Allah doesn't care.
Are you kidding?
So there was like a whorehouse in the middle of this pond. His mother-in-law was in the middle of this pond, or his mom. I forget. There was like things. There were horrible buildings in the middle of these different ponds.
Wow.
And, you know, the whorehouse was, they were very young girls, and it was bad. So it was, but you would, so there are definitely red light districts. Mm-hmm. There are definitely people are getting laid. It turns out Muslims are getting laid.
Yeah.
Even in very strict Islamic countries
where
they're not supposed to drink and they're not supposed to smoke and they're not supposed to do things.
Right.
I think they can smoke. But the things are happening.
How was it sleeping over there?
It was scary just because I'm not particularly courageous, but I'm not that twitchy.
Mm-hmm.
And because of Scott Kennedy, I knew that he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we get there and it's all dust storms. It's the first week of July.
Yeah, those are supposed to be.
Yeah, it's the first week of July, which it was genuinely 121 degrees. It was hard to breathe in Kuwait when we landed because you'd fly commercial to Kuwait and then you'd fly military from Kuwait to Baghdad. And we tried to fly into Baghdad, but there was a dust storm, so we had to turn around. But in that
Wait, you tried to fly where?
From Kuwait to Baghdad.
You're in the military plane. What kind of plane?
It was like it was one of those
cargo.
Troop plane.
Oh my
god, troop plane. And they were like, oh, it's too windy, so we're going back to Kuwait. So.
Windy or too much of a sandstorm?
It was a sandstorm.
Did you see it from your plane?
I didn't see it.
There's no windows.
Because we were above the. Well, there was no. I was in the cockpit. It was awesome. It was awesome. I was in the cockpit, and the pilots drank these tiny little kind of Red Bull things. That I drink pots of coffee a day. And the pilots are like, you want to try that? They're great. The enlisted guys are always trying to get us to give them. Because if you join the service, by the way, I would recommend this if you're thinking of joining the service. Air Force, way to go.
Yeah.
They got all the air conditioning. They have ice cream machines. It's great.
Take care of the pilots.
Yeah, they take care of. Yeah.
Was it different than what we know of a 5-hour energy drink? It's something else. What
it's
you're
something
describing.
Else. Those 5-hour energy drinks are only 3 ounces. This thing was like 8 ounces or 6 ounces, and it was a soda, but it was an orange, and I was just tripping.
Yeah.
I was buzzing like a crazy person. I wouldn't have another.
You wouldn't and ever.
No, no, I would not. I don't even.
Are you a Red Bull drinker?
I don't drink Red Bull or any of that stuff either.
That's not for me.
I think there was a window when it's sort of a Mike's Hard Lemonade. Like if you missed out on your, like I think I drank Zima's.
Yeah.
And that was more the shitty drink of my youth. Mm-hmm. So whatever. But
these pilots are drinking it for what reason? To stay energized or?
To stay up because they unfortunately, they're flying too much.
So wait a minute. Now you're in a plane, a military plane flying into Iraq, heading into a sandstorm. And by the mere fact that these pilots are offering you this drink, you know that they're on it and they are fatigued.
Right. They very easily could be fatigued, but they all seem good. So there's two pilots and then there's a navigation guy and then there's a kid that keeps running. He's sort of a PA, just keeps running back and forth, bringing him stuff. And then Scott and the other comic who was Nate Bargatze.
Okay.
Remember that guy? Okay. He's good, a very funny comic.
I mean, remember that guy is...
Have you met that guy?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you said remember like it's passed.
Oh, like he passed away as well.
No.
Nope. Nate Bargatze, okay. Good egg.
Great guy.
Still working. And but they were down in the belly of the ship with the plane.
Why did you get the cockpit?
Because because
you're a lady.
Because I was a lady. I got to go first. And then the other thing I got was I got my own tent when we were in the forward operating base.
Wait a minute.
I got the VIP tents.
What are you talking about?
Because
you went to the forward operating area?
Yeah, yeah, because we couldn't fly anywhere. We were supposed to fly in these helicopters, right?
No. And the troop transport helicopters?
No, the
fighter ones?
Yeah, the fighter ones.
I said the fighter ones.
Yeah,
very
we don't
masculine.
Know. We
the
don't
Black
know.
Hawks?
That's it. I think they were Black Hawks.
Good Lord.
And that's one of the reasons I went too, because I wanted to fly in a Black
are
Hawk.
Are you crazy?
But
those are a target.
Right, but they would not. I don't know. Anyway, I've never flown in a helicopter. Have you ever flown in a helicopter?
Yes.
Was it neat?
It was neat, and I will. Yes. Although once
for
it
why?
Was, but well, a couple times. Well,
you didn't do the Grand Canyon one, did you?
No.
Although, I will never do that.
Here's
That's
what
too
it was.
Scary.
It was Talladega Nights, and
right on.
We were. Let's see. I drove there with Ian Roberts and Jack McBrayer, and it took several hours from where we were staying because that's in Alabama, which is next to Mississippi.
Right.
Shout out to Mississippi, yeah, Gulf Coast. We hope it's getting better. And so drove there. Will had choppered in.
Okay.
Will and Adam McKay and their manager had choppered in. I had driven it. Took several hours. We got a police escort once we got close. I forget if we were. We flew from somewhere and then we drove to Talladega.
Okay.
So go there. Now on the way back, the choice was truck back out or, hey, Keckner, we've got an extra seat on the chopper. And that's a pretty big one. So it's me, Will, Adams McCabe's and Jim Miller. And then Michael Clark Duncan was going to come with us.
Yeah.
And then myself and God rest Michael. But
was he?
Huh? He's passed.
Oh my God.
Yes.
All right.
But once we were about to get on in the chopper.
Yeah.
He got in and then got out and said no.
Oh, okay.
And I
so
was like,
kinda,
that's not fair.
Yeah.
You can't.
Because now they have to drive you somewhere fancy. And,
well, no. Because you can't buddy holly me.
Oh, there you go.
You can't say yes. And then you're the guy that said no.
And you're going to live.
And then, it's like, wait. And that gave me a great deal of unease. But then we were chopping, like, there were four seats in the back and two seats in the front, and, but it was fine.
Possibly
but
too dark.
But it was a bit harrowing.
Right. Was it open-doored?
No,
closed-doored.
Was your Black Hawk open-doored?
We didn't get to fly Black Hawks.
Okay.
We had to drive through Iraq in Humvees.
Uh-uh.
In, like, these MRAP things, these mine-resistant armored personnel vehicles.
Yeah.
And we got lost. And
They don't have GPS?
Well, the hilarious thing is, and this is a true story, I tell it in my act, but the navigation guy, this guy Munoz, I found out we were lost because we were all on headphones, and he goes, the sergeant says, why are we lost, Munoz? Why are we lost? And Munoz, because everyone's hilarious in a war zone, said, this is where MapQuest sent us, Sarge.
No.
Funny stuff, Munoz.
Are you wearing body armor?
I am. I'm wearing a Kevlar thing and a helmet.
Oh my God.
But, and then shorts.
Because it's 120.
Because it's 120. Even in the MRAP, which was air conditioned, it was still an 85, 90 degrees.
Good Lord.
So, and it was.
You're cracking jokes all the way because that's your job.
Well, and it was the driver guy, the Munoz, the navigator guy. There was a kid sticking out the blowhole.
No.
With a bonnet that it.
A gunner.
Right? A gunner dude.
Wow.
And then I'm in the truck with Scott. There's videos on my YouTube page of me shooting us driving through Baghdad and inside the MRAP.
How many kills?
I didn't get any kills. No okay. kills. But everyone, I mean, like literally it was scary. Like when we were on the hump of this irrigation ditch
mm-hmm.
and Iraqis, we would drive by them and they would point and go, how the hell did they get up there? We don't even know how we, and then Munoz had to get out of the truck at one point and direct us over and he goes, that's where the bad guys are.
Oh my gosh.
And I tell the story, but it's, you know, in, when you work at a restaurant and mm-hmm. someone throws up in the bathroom or mm-hmm. the club, mm-hmm. right? And then the manager comes out and everyone freezes and he picks someone and then that person goes, fuck.
Yeah.
And grabs a mop and a bucket and goes, cleans it up. So the sergeant on the headphones goes, someone has to get out of this truck and direct us over this dirt bridge. And we were in a 3 MRAP convoy. And I swear to God, I could hear the silence from the other 2 MRAPs.
Wow.
But the silence over the phone, everyone just froze.
That was the worst part.
Yeah. And I was in the front one. And he goes, Munoz, it has to be you because you're the only one who has a door. So he gets out and he directs us over the thing. And, but he had to get out 3 times.
Wow.
And he did it every time, and that was when I realized that being in the Army was a job, a shitty day job.
Oh my God!
And crazy.
Where were your gigs?
They were outside of. It was right after we said that we were pulling out of Baghdad, mm-hmm. and we did. We pulled out of Baghdad and built all kinds of nonsense right outside of Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a political move. To say, see, we're retreating. We're giving the city back to their people.
Right.
And we were, but it was very, you know, it was just one step in the.
Right.
But
we built a Pentagon there.
Yeah.
It's our embassy.
Yeah.
But it's huge and multi fortified, right?
Yeah. It's a giant fort and it's, but it was, yeah, I was
it's,
thinking.
It's much like the Wild West when we would go out there and build these stick forts.
Right.
In Indian Native American territory.
Right.
Indigenous
right.
territory.
Right. And which is exactly what that's what empires do.
Yes.
We go to places that aren't ours and we build outposts.
Boy, we are spoiling for a fall.
I've often thought this. Do you think, you know, during the fall of Rome
mm-hmm.
that everyone was sitting around comparing the fall of Rome thinking, you know, I wonder if back when Egypt was falling, if they mm-hmm. all knew that it was the end.
Yeah.
Because I think you know when things are in decline.
Yep.
You know that it's not.
Well, Rome was death by 1,000 cuts.
Oh.
It was a bunch of dogs biting everywhere, and they just couldn't do it. They expanded too far, but we've done the same thing.
It's got that's the only way to get rid of an empire.
We have standing armies everywhere. There are 10,000 American soldiers in
the world.
About no. Oh, many, many different places. I don't know if we still have...
Oh, different 10,000?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
We used to have 10,000 in Germany.
How come I'm not working those gigs?
Yeah, right?
No, right?
I know, you know we have a huge contingent in Japan, huge contingent in North Korea. I'm sorry, South Korea. A huge contingent in... I think we used to... I'm sure we have 10,000 men in Europe.
All over Europe,
and
I
remember taking a class, like a poli-sci class in college, and they said, you know, the reason we have 10,000 men here or there, that's not to defend anything. It's to give us the excuse to go in.
Right.
It's to protect that soil for a minute till we get everybody else there.
Yeah.
Because if you take one of my pawns,
yeah.
Now we're at war.
Well, and now, this is, I was talking with Andy about this, because the ISIS or ISIL, mm-hmm. whatever, the group mm-hmm. that keeps, they're very much doing conquering
mm-hmm.
in an old school kind of Genghis Khan kind of way.
Genghis Khan, Visigoth.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because the way we take over things is we just build a fort
mm-hmm.
and say that we're helping.
Right.
The way they're doing it is they're just burning everything to the ground, and then they are rebuilding the water treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, they're starting schools, but they're all super conservative.
Indoctrination schools.
Yeah, they're starting, you know, it's very much, it's exactly like the Romans.
Yep.
It's not like what...
Tried and true.
Right, it's so old school that everyone's like, well, it's a terrorist organization. I'm like, no, this... I mean, I'm terrified.
It's way that's the way it's done.
That's the way it's always been done. Was it, this new way is new.
Yeah, but it's the old way. Which who was it? The Huns or the Visigoths or the Mongols?
Possibly
would,
all of them.
Would put the heads of defeated armies on spears.
Right.
And carry those into battle to strike fear into whatever our army they're going up against, which is exactly what ISIL's doing. Beheading, laying around.
Yep.
And getting
and just showing people the heads and going, this is what heads look like.
Television is the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
This is so what we'll do to you.
It's just super creepy. Backing up.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, have you seen a show on PBS called Genealogy Roadshow?
No.
It is the
Antique Roadshow. Okay.
But by the same people who did Antique Roadshow, but for regular people, they will look up your genealogy.
Uh-huh.
And they could trace you back to Genghis Khan.
Well, I know where our, we know where ours stops. Obviously, my grandfather stops in New York.
Did you do DNA too?
No.
Because they do DNA.
Oh.
And they can bring you back to France in the 7th century.
How far you want to go? Bring that beat back. How far you want to go back, brother?
I want to go back.
I do too.
Yeah.
And then we go back to Ireland on my mother's side.
Right.
But then in Ireland, the church the records were kept in churches,
mm-hmm.
and the church where our ancestors' records were kept burned.
Oh, fair enough.
So
yep. So you know, that's how it
happens. It's fascinating how we have this desire to know.
Right, right. And Americans usually just want to go back to when we got here.
Mm-hmm.
But other, like what they did one, not Genealogy Roadshow, but when they do them in other countries, people want to go back to, you know, where the Yeah, they want to go back to all of it. So, but,
and we're not talking about the television show, folks. If you don't, just Google Lucy.
Lucy is the supposedly like the first lady,
oldest,
right?
Well, the oldest known skeleton. I think they recently found one a little bit older.
It's nice that they didn't name her Eve.
Right.
And,
that's my youngest daughter's name.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, pretty.
Yeah.
That's nice. Let's talk about some of these, these books you've, the Wright brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to read too many books at once.
Yes. I like to overwhelm myself.
I sense that because we're like 25 minutes in and you've talked about 19 things. So it's perfect.
At least I'm interested.
Yep. And interesting.
Well,
all of it.
That's
so,
arguable.
Yeah. So what are you reading right now or trying to read?
Well, you've got your list. I'm reading a biography essentially of the Wright brothers.
Okay.
McCullough is the,
author,
and I loved his 1776. He narrates it wonderfully.
Oh, is it audible?
Well, no, the one I'm reading is not an audible, but I probably should have made it because I really enjoy his narration, and I really enjoy his writing.
Okay.
So that's why I picked that one up
and
at the airport.
And he had written one about 1776?
Yes, it's fabulous, and that's one to listen to. I love it.
Okay.
He's got this really dry delivery, but it's just lyrical enough, and you can tell there's such confidence and engagement in the way he's doing it. I loved it, and I used to listen to it when my son, Charlie, who's now 16, was in grade school, and he would listen on the way to school.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't demand to listen to all of it, which is okay.
Yep.
But years later, somehow, you know, you accidentally, I think I put it in the van accidentally. You can
rotation?
Yeah. Yeah. And the kids had learned the first stanza of like the fifth or sixth chapter.
Oh, my
and
God.
And it was this. The troops were in good spirits. And so they all know. Because then we go, wait a minute, wrong song. Yep. Yeah. So, so that's why I picked up the Wright brothers, because I find him a fascinating and engaging writer. And I love history as well. And what else is on the list?
Well, so 1776 was clearly just a history of sort of the
Revolutionary War.
Okay. Yeah. So, and the start of it, did it start before 1776?
Yes.
And go through 81, or what did they do?
Gosh, I can't remember.
Or did they just go through the Declaration of Independence?
You know what? I can't remember. Was that when the war actually
stopped?
That's
when the war actually ended.
Yes, very good. Yes, they do. He goes through the end of the war.
Okay.
Yes, and the mistakes.
So it's essentially just an anthology, a historical perspective of the war.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
Mm-hmm.
And personality driven. That's my favorite kind of history.
Oh yeah. You get to learn all the major players and who the heroes were. And you know, when you think about it, it's really remarkable when you think about these people who were part of a young nation who left their farms to fight for this country.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go barefoot.
Yeah.
You're leaving your livelihood. I mean, how many of us today won't bother to do anything but check Twitter?
That's it.
I mean, that's our level of engagement. Are you kidding? Pick up a gun and fight for your country? Yeah. Thank God people do, like your nephew. Yeah. But
well, that's what I was going to tell you about him, by the way, is that he wanted to be a spy. He wanted to learn Arabic and go to Monterey and learn Arabic and become a, he's in the Marines. He wanted to be a recon Marine.
Wow.
and do all this stuff. And when he got out of boot camp, I said, so how's it coming? And he actually said, the Mississippi public school system has not done me any favors. He said, I'm in a recon group. I don't know if he's in a recon group, but he said, I'm with kind of a spy or an intelligence group, but I drive the truck.
Ah.
And he said, it's a hard truck to drive. It's kind of a fancy truck.
Yeah. he's Munoz.
Yeah, he's Munoz.
Yeah.
And I mean, the fact that anybody's willing, I mean, we're not even willing to go do sit-ins or marches and stuff like that anymore. I mean, when you think about it, the sit-in is a classic American kind of thing from the 60s, where a post-World War II kind of way of protesting something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to sit here. No, you're going to have to pull me away from this.
And now anytime
and now we can't even do that.
Any group that organizes gets all kinds of negative media attention. Occupy got nothing but negative media attention.
Yeah,
now Black Lives Matter get all kinds of, it's astounding to me.
For no reason.
And then no one says anything. We go, okay, you're gonna shut that one down? Okay, we'll be fine with it.
Mm.
So Fox News or whoever those agents are.
It's interesting, they haven't been able to destroy Move On. From the, Move On must be savvier than that.
I guess, but I don't hear a lot from them.
Oh, I'm on their mailing list.
They're
which is non-existent. They're non-stop.
I know, I had to unscrub subscribe. I gotta tell you, I had to say no more.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was three or four a day.
Right. It isn't that many anymore.
Like, who's working over there? Are you guys bored? I still subscribe to The Nation, so I get theirs. So I'll do their bidding.
A friend of mine gave me a subscription to The Progressive, and I've never renewed it, and they keep sending it to me, and it's very beautiful. And the great thing is that they have comics writing articles, like Will Durst and Kate Clinton.
Wow.
They both write columns.
Well, that's cool.
And it's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I need any more reading material.
Well, that's it. I mean,
I've got books everywhere. I've got books in the bathroom. I'm also actually rereading The History of the San Fernando Valley, which I found fascinating.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there's a book I have that I haven't started. It's supposed to be one of the best biographies of a city, which is the City of Quartz, which is about Los Angeles, because I always like to know where I live.
Okay.
But at least the San Fernando Valley book allowed me to identify the mountains that are around us, and I insist that my children know
which
the mountains.
Mountain
like
range is
you,
which
you don't
mountain
even
range?
Appreciate you these. No, you see the mountains, like oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no, those are mountains. There's mountain ranges.
Right.
I'm going to help you know which direction you're going. And each one has a very specific place where it begins and ends and continues to.
Right. Or it's a little geography lesson.
Right. And that's why it's called the Valley. And so, they'll shut me out, but they're still listening a little bit because I'm talking to them.
Right. And you're their father.
Yes.
So, my father would hold forth. And it's the only way you can really pass on information is to hold forth at some point.
Right. The thing I'm, cautious of is the amount of technology. And was it you and I that were talking about this? Talking about
at the show the other night?
Yeah, we were talking about GPS.
Yeah.
When we first got here, you had to go through the book?
The Thomas Guide.
The Thomas Guide. Were we talking about that?
No, we weren't. But I had a Thomas Guide when I first moved here. And the map, it was a map book.
Yes.
And you would go to either the next page. It would be linear, it'd be horizontal, or you would go vertical.
Up and down,
and you'd have to go up like 45 pages to find the next down map.
Yes.
Because the city was so big, and it was such a detailed map, and every year they'd come out with a new Thomas Guide, and it was $40.
Yep.
And so you could last on one Thomas Guide for about 4 or 5 years.
And those pages got well-worn and ratted,
and you learned
how to drive in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Now, my son 16 is like, do you know where we are?
Nope.
Like, then he looks up from his phone.
Yep.
While he's driving.
I'm kidding.
Okay. But that's the thing I'm cautious or trepidatious about is that one satellite goes down and we can't get groceries anymore.
Right. Well, and it's pretty devastating the amount of, it's the I travel so much, and my head is inside my iPad because I'm standing in one line after another line. I'm there for hours on end, and it's really the only thing that's keeping me sane. It's books on tape and reading books and being in my iPad. And I think about I don't have to develop any patience anymore,
right?
Because I can just weed off and go in my own world.
It's a pacifier.
It's very
we self soothe.
It's a fucking sippy cup.
Yep, it is.
It's the worst.
Yeah, I'll go here. Maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll do that.
I'm bored now. I'm gonna play
it's,
the jewel.
It's incessant. It's nasty. And what do we get done? And you know, you really do have to start monitoring yourself.
You know what Andy says about the GPS? He's like, because I have the even if I know where I'm going, I'll sometimes have the Waze on, right?
Yep.
And he's like, you should be out past the just looking at the signs and seeing where you are. And I'm like, well, the good thing about the Waze and the MapQuest thing is that it tells me the name of the upcoming streets. And he goes, yeah, there's signs. Did you know right outside the window?
Yeah.
There's a sign right there. All in 3D and everything.
Right. And you I grew up when you had to have a bank of about 20 or 25 phone numbers that you could remember.
Offhand. I can still remember some childhood friends. And luckily my friends still live with their parents.
Now I could not recite to you is a sad thing, my son and daughter's phone numbers.
You don't even have theirs.
I have them in my phone.
Right.
And I know I know the first six digits.
Right.
I know my wife's.
Right. I know my husband's. And I know my sister's cell phone last four digits because there's two other numbers in there. And I'm like, that's the cell phone.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if that thing goes down, we can't call each other. We don't know anything.
Yeah.
I want to do a bit about that. I'm not sure exactly where it goes, but
it also
involves automatic towel dispensers, which bother me, which I think is predicated because there's some guy who's not qualified to fill paper towels. You know, that guy that puts them in too tight.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so you can't get one out. So you have to pull seven out, which is a huge waste.
Yep.
So they said, okay, we can't find a person competent enough that we can pay a modicum amount of money who can properly fill a paper towel dispenser the right way so they keep unfolding out, that we have to invest in technology that dispenses a paper towel to you
right
in their at their desired length.
I think it's more germaphobes.
Someone can't steal that bit because I'm going to write it.
Don't steal that bit because that's going to be a good one. But with the Purell and the
ridiculous,
and you don't touch the water, you don't touch
the handle,
the dispenser, you don't touch anything. And I'm building an immune system myself. I don't eat off the floor. That's not true. I occasionally eat off the floor.
Yep.
5-second rule. And so that's you scratching your beard, by the way. I can tell
I'm so
that.
Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. But people should know David Koechner has a beard.
I'm growing it for a role.
Hey, are you?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, people should, at David Koechner, by the way, and davidkoechner.com. You're going to be doing stand-up the first week of October at Helium in Portland.
Portland, great
Oregon,
club.
Great club. And then the first week of November in Salt Lake City in Utah at 50 West Club.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just 5, 6, and 7? Is that a comedy club, 50 West Club?
I guess.
Or is it a theater?
No, not a theater.
It is. It's a straight stand-up club?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Now, they've got two in Salt Lake. It's Wise Guys, right?
Yeah, I do the Wise Guys.
Isn't that? I thought that's what that was.
50 West, maybe that's a... Because they used to
have... They have two. They have one out in the suburbs and then
right,
one...
They used to have Trolley Square and they have one out in the suburbs, but maybe that's the subtitle of
one of
Wise
them.
Guys.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Wise Guys hashtag 50 West Club.
I don't know.
People can Google it and they just go and they'll...
You guys Google it. I'm too lazy.
I was the last time I was in Salt Lake City, so I went out to lunch at a Vietnamese sandwich place, and three different people told me I was in the ghetto. And I said, I don't think you understand what that word means, because it's hard to notice the ghetto through the thriving businesses that are all around.
Right, without any trash.
No trash. It's a little spooky.
It's.
I love you, Salt Lake City, but you make me uncomfortable after day three. The first 2 days, I feel like I'm in a vat of warm rising bread dough, which is Maria's imagery, but but that third day. But the Wright brothers,
yes.
are you a fair amount into it, the David McCullough book?
I'm probably about 80 pages in, maybe 100.
So is it start about their childhood and
yes.
and their family stuff?
Yes.
So this is just a straight bio.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And then are you reading a W.C. Fields biography too?
Yes. Because I love W.C. Fields. I love him.
He's pretty great.
William Claude.
But I don't know. All I know about him is that he was rude and drunk and hilarious.
That was a persona.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, his, you know.
That was a character.
Yeah.
Well, he did wear a hat. That's all I ever want from a character.
He was very. I wear hats. I didn't wear one today. He was very bright, very well read, but also undereducated. So he always he could discourse on Ibsen.
Okay.
With the best of them. So, yeah. But you know, there's
not
a
lot of formal education.
Right, and so I also suffer from that same thing coming like your nephew from a not rigorous childhood education.
Sure. Very rural Missouri.
Yeah, and so when you do get out in the world, you see how deep people go, and I think that's why I want to read so much.
You want to catch up.
I want to catch up.
I'm with you.
Even though I'm almost 53, I still feel like...
But the thing is you're just like, I have said it before, it is just like I'm like, you can't out-white trash me, you know?
And, same. I can out-white trash you,
but
probably.
Almost everyone. I mean, the thing is I spend so much of my time trying to rise above my own roots.
Same.
Even though I have some connection with that very basic upbringing.
That's who we are.
Yeah.
Yep. And why are we running from it? Why don't we embrace it and go, this is something most of you don't know.
Right. But I embrace it, but I also do not want to go back there because there is a certain amount of foolishness. To, you know, like the people who celebrate their redneckedness.
Yes.
I'm like, I celebrate the work ethic I came from and the poverty and the things that we did to make do, but I don't celebrate the foolishness.
Right.
I don't want to hate black people because they're black.
Right. I don't embrace ignorance.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
I want to be smarter than that. Mm-hmm. And I do. And they're like my stepmother, she was a hairdresser and had an associate's degree and read voraciously.
Wow.
And she was just, it was her, one of her favorite jokes is she was how does a Roman soldier order 5 beers? And then she would make the peace symbol. And,
nice.
Yeah, it's a nice one. And she said, it's a nice way to figure out if anybody likes knowledge or don't.
Wow.
And, she was smarter than the average bear for, but was not raised. She just read a lot.
Yeah.
And she didn't read a lot of nonfiction. She read a lot of historical fiction.
I love it. Oh, historical fiction. And those are fascinating, too.
Right. Depends on the amount of research, but you get some information from all of it.
It puts you inside of it and lets you live the era and understand all of the parameters of what's going on culturally, socially,
gives you more empathy
politically,
than a
lot
of things.
Yes, lets you view the world from the top down or from the bottom up.
Yep.
Yeah, which is a better way to actually learn about an era if you travel with a person rather than just the facts which they give us. We've just discovered a new way to teach folks, which is you really should read very good historical fiction.
Right.
Because it puts you in that time and place where you see it, feel it, hear it, smell it, live it.
Even if you read shitty historical fiction, which I have done both.
Yeah. At least it puts you in the time and the place.
Yeah.
Because if you read from a soldier's point of view, that would give you the entire geopolitical history of that era.
Right. I was trying to remember. There was a I had it. And if anyone remembers this, email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com. But I can't because I think I gave away the book. But it was a mystery novel set in the Napoleonic era.
Wow.
And the guy who solved the murder was a French soldier. And it was a French writer, but he wrote in English, I think. And it was written from the they're marching towards Russia.
Wow. So you're in the soldier's boots.
Right, you're in the soldier's boots, but it's also a mystery novel. And he is trying to figure out who, and it, you know, it could be some nobleman who just killed this, and he's a serial killer because he keeps killing whores as they go through different, and he's like,
well, that's fascinating from a social, political, economic, perspective. Because first of all, was he conscripted?
It was, this guy is sort of.
Was he a volunteer?
Like, well, it's Napoleon, so he's one of the new bourgeois.
Right.
So he's a.
But this guy's a soldier.
But he's a soldier.
He is a volunteer.
He's an officer, but he's middle class. He's part of the new middle class that Napoleon created.
You tell the same story from a conscripted soldier, and then it causes less war in the future if that's a book that children have to read early because they realize that this person's choice has been taken away and how valuable it is to make sure you always have a choice and so you'd always vote. Because otherwise, you might allow the draft to come back for an imperialistic war that shouldn't happen in the first place to protect multinational interests. I don't have opinions.
Right. It turns out David Koechner's dorkdom might also be politics.
I was a poli-sci major.
Me too. Hey,
really? How about that?
Where'd you go to college?
I went to a small Catholic college in Atchison, Kansas called Benedictine College.
Okay.
I was conscripted because my parents said you have to go there.
Oh, that's
for 2 years. That's your only choice for college.
Okay.
It had a familial background story to why I had to go there.
Your
then
people
I could,
went there.
Well, my mother's brother was the abbot of the monastery. My mother and her family, very, very Catholic. Mm-hmm. Out of 11 children, there were two priests and two nuns out of that particular clan.
Yeah.
So I had to go there, and her sisters had gone there. And her brothers, so that was it. And then I could go anywhere I wanted after that.
Okay, so you went to 2 years there.
Mm-hmm. And then I went to the University of Missouri for a year and change and realized I didn't... Did you complete your degree?
I did, but only because my sister, it turns out, is the boss of me.
Ah.
She insisted.
Yes, it's more of a philosophy degree, and I would have continued, but I realized I don't want to be a politician anymore. That's right. What I first thought I was going
to
do.
I wanted to be a lawyer.
Is that... Yeah, see, I knew I didn't want to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to... I knew I wasn't going to make the grade in politics.
Yeah.
Because you either have to be wealthy, mm-hmm, or from a political family, or the smartest person
in the room
of any room you walk into. What qualifies you to be a politician.
Yeah.
And too bad that it's usually not the third thing, which is the smartest person in the room.
Which is nice.
So I realized that I'm not going to do that. And I kind of quit going to my classes.
Yeah.
Not kind of, I did. And you stopped. I didn't know. But that is what propelled me to go to Chicago, visit, see the Second City, see that they taught classes. Like, oh, that's how a person becomes that thing. I had no idea how you pursue a life.
And that's how you got into a sketch comedy and stand up and all.
I started doing stand up 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus, dude. Nice work.
Well, thank you. But I mean, yeah. I've done live forever.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, you started out on sort of second base, at least, because you had performance skills and comedy skills.
Maybe third base.
But you might have started born on third. So you did Second City?
Did Second City in a place called the I.O. At the time it was called the Improv Olympic. Now it's just called I.O.
Yep.
That's where I started the I.O. and then took classes concurrently at the Second City.
Okay.
And so I had the luxury of being in class 4 or 5 hours a week, and then would take additional workshops with people who just start doing workshops sometimes for free. There's that phone
we
were talking about earlier.
There's that phone we're going to talk about. Tell the story.
I'm going to tell the story.
And I'll go hang up.
You know, we're fascinated to find out who's calling today. But so I was taking classes all the time, and I tell this story all the time about the 10,000 hours theory and how I was able to collect many hours on stage because I was taking a lot of classes. And this is before there were multiple levels of class. And nowadays,
it was all just one big class?
Well, you'd have maybe 3 levels. Now they have 12. So by the time actually get good stage time now, it takes a year or two years. I was on stage in 8 weeks. And ironically, I think there are probably a lot of gifted, talented people that are not going to go through a system because
it's too big.
It's too big. It's too expensive. And so you won't see these bright lights of comedy because of the way the irony of the success of people that came when I was there.
Yeah.
Specifically, I was there for 9 years. I was there with Carell, Colbert, Nancy Walls, Brian Stack, Conan Ryder, Kevin Dorff, Conan Ryder. Yeah, she's awesome, right?
She's awesome.
Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Horatio Sanz, Rachel Dratch, Andy Richter, John Glazer, Adam McKay, Brian McCann, Chris Farley, all of my guys in Beer Shark Mice. It's a who's who of people, but their success from these institutions then engulfed these institutions with a wealth of students, which is where they really earn the money.
Yeah.
The classes
pay the bills.
Uh-huh. And now the irony is you can't get through them.
Yeah, because it's too expensive.
You can't get to the stage.
It is so hard now because of the way things are sort of institutionalized. There's a lot of stand-up classes and there's a lot of sketch classes.
Stand-up classes.
Back when I first started doing stand-up, there was a lot. And for many years, 20 years, there's been people who've... And you can do stand-up without classes.
Right.
You can go to 1,000 open mics and learn it that way. But if you need a stand-up class to get on stage, I don't have a problem with that.
I don't either, and I know there's a strong argument against it, because it might just be someone who's...
Because it feels gougy.
Yes, and it might just be somebody who can't make a living doing it, but then invites people to... learn. And I would say the upside of that is at least they're participating in art, and probably by having a class in stand-up, somebody might go to the theater or might go to a class or take on a risk that they wouldn't have done without that thing.
So
it really does inform the populace.
Right. It informs the populace. The best people to teach stand-up, in my opinion, are people who are not good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because not good at it. But
no, I understand what you're saying.
Because what you do is you encourage people, you give them very basic skills, and when they see you do stand up to some extent, they can go, oh, if they can do it, I can do it.
Right.
And
if they're that open If a person that is teaching the class doesn't try to snuff out talent, because you right. see that too. You have teachers who are jealous of someone else's yes. gift. It goes back, what was that movie?
Solieri,
who's no. jealous of Beethoven.
Oh, right. Amadeus.
You know. Yeah, Amadeus. Thank
yeah.
you.
That can happen in any business.
Yes.
Right?
Where a person yeah. doesn't like a mediocre talent that recognizes right. great talent wants it to fail.
Right. Just be psyched you recognize it and celebrate it.
Right.
Right. The yes.
And you nurture it. That's right. your thing.
And if somebody's telling you what kind of stand-up to write,
right.
don't take that advice. Right. Just because you have to write what you write. You yeah. write. Everyone writes poorly in the beginning. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be done about it. Right. I had an amazing bit about how Batman and Robin might be gay.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of my first bits. I don't know if because of the poll. Anyway, but
nice.
I moved on. And but you gotta. I mean, you have to write
somewhere.
Those jokes.
Yeah.
And everyone writes bodily function stuff,
yep.
and they write just crap. And eventually, you
Aristotle
find stuff,
wrote it. Come on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so eventually you find stuff that's very much your own,
mm-hmm.
and that's the stuff that really shines.
Right.
And
whatever's funny to you, then you, the audience agrees with you. Like, okay.
Yep.
Then you just keep writing.
Yeah, just keep, yeah.
And not
always
stealing.
Keep writing. Don't steal, because there's no point to it.
There's no point. You'll be found out, but, and then.
And it's just, it's not that it's lazy, because it actually takes more work to steal from mm-hmm. other people. It's genuinely, you're hurting yourself, because there's good stuff in everybody.
Right.
There's amazing work inside of you. You don't have to steal. Screw it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's Tom Popper right now has the greatest premise in the world that I accidentally did. I just said it out loud on stage one time, and then I had to call him and go, hey, I did half of your new joke, and I'm so sorry. And he goes,
so did you know it before you did it, or you realized after?
In mid-sentence.
Uh-huh.
And then the premise is the greatest premise ever, and what he said on stage was TomPapa.com, and he said that his wife was crazy,
mm-hmm.
and she was crazy because that is the job of him and his children, is to drive her crazy,
uh-huh.
and because all mothers are crazy, and my premise is that my mother is crazy,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same fucking premise. I can't do it anyway. Is that? I would always think how crazy my stepmother was. But the reason she was crazy was because she was crazy. She had been driven mad.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Papa's theory was that his wife is the only person in their house who wakes up knowing that there's work to do. Everyone else wakes up. And so she's the only one who wakes up going, well, we got to eat, and we got to get the kids to school, and we got to put your shoes on. And so by the time that she is fully awake, she's yelling.
Uh-huh.
And everyone is going, well, we just woke up.
Right. Why are you already yelling? She's 10 miles down the road.
Right. And she's like, someone has to care. And Tom is like, so him and his kids just roll their eyes at each other as she goes mad. And it's the greatest premise in the world. And I wish I could.
But what was your bit?
My bit was about how it took me so long to appreciate the fact that the reason my mother was crazy was because we had driven her mad.
I think there's plenty of ways to slice that same premise,
that's
though. It doesn't
Tom
sound
said.
Like you're...
Yeah. Yeah. Tom said, you know, just find a different way to get into it,
yeah.
and then you're fine.
Yeah.
And so I haven't yet found a place. Mm-hmm. But I loved that it was a freaking epiphany when he said it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
That's great comedy.
Yeah.
That's great comedy.
Yeah.
Is when you...
You hope to, things fire in people, other people's synapses while you were talking.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the fun mm-hmm. of it.
So you don't just read, for the love of God, let us talk to David
Okay.
Kemper. So what about the Johnny Rotten bio?
That was given to me for free. And so I read the first chapter.
He's a musical person,
yes,
right?
Johnny Rotten was with the Sex Pistols.
There we go.
And then Public Image Limited.
Okay.
I think the name of the book is Rise, which
okay.
is Public Image Limited's most famous song.
Okay.
Which is Anchorage and Energy. You may be wrong. Which, by the way, coincidentally enough, I saw they're going back on tour.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I started that one because it was given to me. I'm like, I'll start reading this now.
Yeah.
I think it was given to me at a radio station, so I went back to my room at the hotel when I was touring and
yep.
started reading it. And then I put that down.
Right.
And then just more stuff to carry around. And what else
what
was
else
on
did
there?
You pick up? Story by Robert McKee?
Well, that's one you know, if you're going to write a screenplay.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a learning one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of neat,
mm-hmm.
though. And is it good?
It's great.
And you're listening to The War of Art?
Right. Anytime you're stuck, I would suggest it, Pressman. It's basically Stephen Pressfield? Yeah, Pressfield. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it.
I think there might be another one by another guy that I'm reading called Pressman, but Pressfield, he's a prolific writer.
Okay.
And, I agree with his premise of, your enemy is resistance, so don't resist it. It's like, you know.
Just the art? Just let it go, or?
Well, we all, when we don't do something, you have the resistance. And I think the deeper premise to that thing is whatever you're resisting gives you some anxiety. So don't have it, because anxiety doesn't exist if you don't create it.
Okay.
Some of it's real for some people because there might have been a trauma, and I'm not suggesting that that's not real.
No, but if you can process it correctly,
yes.
Which is easier to say than do, mm-hmm. obviously. But if you can, you can get rid of anxiety just because of how.
Well, he doesn't. That's not his premise necessarily, but that's where I go to with the war of art, not the art of war, the war of art, because, you know, just whenever you feel resistance, and we have it all day long, you need to find out what that is and just open it up and get past that.
That'd be awesome.
Don't resist.
Because you're standing in your own way to some extent. Yeah.
Which I argue in show business, there's only one person standing in your way, and it is you. Because there's many times in show business, people are like, well, that guy got my job, or that girl got my job, or no one got your job.
No one got your job.
Yeah. You didn't get the job because of you.
Right. And there's the other work.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about it. And all you can do is keep doing what you do.
Right.
And now, how does that fit into my theory? My theory is all you can do is do what you do mm-hmm. as well as you can do it, and then sort of do the next indicated action. Mm-hmm. But if you don't ever get the job that you wanted, to some extent, I think, and this sounds a little hippy skippy, but I'm like, I don't think that I was meant to get that job.
I agree with that.
And it doesn't matter.
I agree with that.
As long as I can let go to the point where I'm like, well, maybe I'm not meant to have that gig. Right. I have this other gig.
Plus, it's already over.
Yeah.
Why are we focusing on that?
Right.
Life has already moved ahead.
Right. So do the next thing.
Do the next thing. You're already doing it.
Right.
Yeah. My wife is getting her master's in spiritual psychology. So often there's plenty of those books lying around and mm-hmm. discussions to be had about, you know, there's an idea that who you are right now this second is not the same you that was there 2 seconds ago.
Right.
So you're always someone new, and you're always linked to a different power. And there's a center of you that's always a higher relevance, because your body just changed because you're dying. We're all dying.
Oh, right.
We're all growing and dying and all of that stuff.
Yep.
But there's something that's a piece of God that lives, or whatever divinity you choose to make it. The energy that you came from is always there, was always that high seat part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she should focus on. Not like, do I need to get my hair cut? Should I buy these clothes? Why didn't I get that job?
Right.
When you think about that instance and how whatever this universe that we've been granted to be partaking in is a higher seat that we should be seeking anyway.
Yeah.
And not, you know,
so
focus on beheading people. Yeah.
Right. So you focus on like sort of whatever your higher power is or your God or whatever.
Right.
And not worry about sort of, oh, wait a minute. I read this in the Bible one time. It's like, is the God will take care of even the sparrow in the field or some damn thing.
There's those, there's all of those, which is, there's some quote of, you know,
I'm a lily. I'm a lily of the field. That's it. Because it's a Frank Capra quote from You Can't Take It With You.
Ah.
Which is Frank Capra. Who was in It's a Wonderful Life? Jimmy Stewart.
Yes,
it was. So it's a Jimmy Stewart movie with Frank Capra as well. And it is a great movie. It's a great play, but it's one of my favorite movies.
Well, anyway, the point being, like your point, which was you can only do what you do.
Yeah.
And nothing, it doesn't matter about whether or not someone else did.
Right.
It's happening for you right now. So go ahead and participate in it rather than look back.
Right. And worry about what you could have done differently.
The worry doesn't exist unless we created it as well.
Yeah. It's interesting because Andy doesn't have any of that training, but he kind of lives in the moment anyway. And I'm constantly worried about money, and I'm constantly.
And if you worry about money.
Yeah.
It brings more worry.
Right.
And that's that thing. And I know people go, what are you guys talking about? But money's an idea at the same time. Money's an idea.
Right. Don't forget to donate, guys.
Money, but money doesn't exist.
Okay.
Ownership
doesn't.
It's just
an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ownership doesn't exist.
Right.
It's an agreement we all make that, yes, that person owns that building or that boss owns my labor.
Right.
Those are all ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that shouldn't.
It's all going to work out.
It's all going to work out.
Which is Andy's motto. Andy Ashcraft goes through life going, No, I'm just kidding. Because when he was a kid, his dad told him, never work for a living. Eventually, they'll pay you to do what you like to do anyway.
That's perfect.
And and you know what his father did until he died, which was he trained bird dogs for field trials from horseback. And you're like, well, that is the coolest weirdo job in the world. And he fell into it.
And he probably enjoyed it.
And he enjoyed it. Yeah. And before that, he was a navigator for United Airlines.
Wow.
And he just fell into that.
Yeah. And it's not about accumulating things, because someone's going to be, you know, say if you accumulate palaces with whorehouses that are surrounded by ponds, it doesn't matter, because some smart-ass comics are going to be staying at it eventually anyway, mocking your existence.
Exactly. I'm going to hit golf balls into your pond anyway.
Did you?
So yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Super fun. Anyway, David Koechner, it has been an hour. I could talk to you for another hour. Is there anything, what's your favorite book that you've read in the last year or so that you might recommend that... Any of these that you'd recommend people get on? I mean, The War of Art, obviously. I'm going to actually get the audio because I do love an audio.
I love, because you can listen to it at any
nice.
Time.
It's soothing.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the Wright Brothers book. You know what book I want to read and I'm fascinated by is the Nixon book. It's about him, Nixon versus the world or something like that. I can't believe it's not on the New York Times bestseller list. That's fascinating. I watched that documentary. About Nixon.
Oh, about Nixon, the Nixon Frost.
The Nixon
thing?
Tapes.
Oh, the Nixon tapes. Oh, they just showed that. Okay.
Yeah, it's fascinating what the man was going through when he was president of the United States, and it's mind blowing that this guy was in charge of things.
Was he related to somebody famous? Did he have a lot of money, or was he the smartest man in the room?
Smartest man in the room. Smartest. Nixon was a very bright man.
Yeah.
Very, very, very. I won't say conniving, but
just shrewd.
Shrewd. Thank you.
Clever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
And paranoid.
And paranoid as all hell. I remember, because my poli-sci degree, Southeast Asian Studies.
Wow.
For no particular reason, except for that I had a friend who was Indonesian.
I was always fascinated with Vietnam.
Right.
And the Vietnam War. And why did we do it?
Right.
But we really believed in the Red Scare.
Yep.
And that Russia, if Vietnam fell, it was all going to go. We thought that was the linchpin.
Well, everyone believe. I mean, it's the way they scare you into the next thing. They're like, if you allow gay marriage, people are going to marry their cats.
Right.
And
so not to get into politics, but you had to appreciate the restraint of going into Iraq again now with this horrible scourge that is ISIS, because you don't want to get drawn. We've been fighting over there for 20 fucking years.
Yep.
What did we do? We killed a lot of people.
Killed a lot of people, and that guy who was our ally and was a horrible, horrible person, Saddam Hussein, is now gone.
But there's worse.
It's Hydra. Now there's a million of them.
We had an opportunity after 9/11, and Noam Chomsky talks about this, saying that had we made it a police action to find one man who did the bad deed, which is Osama bin Laden, the world would have joined us. They were all on our side at that point.
Right.
But
we went into Afghanistan.
If we made a police action,
we're
just going to find one guy. We're not going after everybody.
Yeah. I even supported going into Afghanistan at the time.
Afghanistan, yes. I believed in that as well.
And then I was like, and now get out.
Now we got a two-front war.
And then I read Flashman. Did you ever read Flashman? George McDonald? it's one of the darkest.
Don't give me a book.
Okay. I will not give you a book. But... people have, I've talked about Flashman.
Jackie
before.
Just pointed to a book on her bookshelf.
Yeah,
have you read Flashman? She's either going to give me a t-shirt or a book to take home.
I'm definitely giving you a t-shirt.
I've already read the t-shirt. I can read that entire thing with one glance.
That's beautiful. Except for that, the bottom of that dark forest, that's elvish. It's what Aragorn says when he finds the white tree at the end of the, Return of the King. That's a Brett Chambers, that was fan art, that Dork Forest logo.
Nice.
And then the black one, that's the Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt that has dorky things coming out of it that my nephew did. And,
nice.
And Andy designed the Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt. But you get to pick one. David Koechner, you guys. Go out and see one of his movies. Go see his stand-up at Portland, Oregon. Follow him on Twitter at David Koechner. And thanks for listening. And you know the rules. Take care of each other.
Right on.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?